The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Hi, this is Jim.
And this is Max.
Check out our podcast, The Step Over, Liberty Ballers Podcast Network, for all of your Sixers needs.
Player analysis, game breakdowns, who would look coolest in a headband, and more.
Subscribe to Liberty Ballers podcast feed on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts, and check out The Step Over, a podcast about Sixers basketball.
Mostly.
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? I've just been handed an urgent and horrifying news story, and I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
Hello, Bleeding Green Nation, and welcome back to BGN Radio. This is episode number 21. I'm John Stolness from BleedingGreenNation.com. You can follow me on Twitter, at John Stolness, and we've got your Eagles-Saints preview episode. Of course, we coming off a tough week against the Dallas Cowboys, and this game is not looking a whole lot more promising. But we're going to break it all down for you here over the next little while. And joining me to do that is, of course, the man, the myth, the legend, the brains behind the operation at Bleeding Green Nation, Mr. Brandon Lee Gouton. You can follow Brandon on Twitter at Brandon Gouton. BLG, man. God, that was awful last week, wasn't it?
It was terrible, John. I'm still not over it.
Not me either.
Like, that was the season. That was the season right there. I know they're still mathematically alive. I know the division isn't great. I know they still can make the playoffs. I get that. But it just doesn't feel like they can at this point anymore. Like, there's no fooling yourself. There's no, like, they haven't, it's week 11 now, and they haven't been able to win back-to-back games. And they just failed to win the biggest game of their season at home, coming off a bye. Cowboys coming off a short week. Like, they had every reason to win that game. Like, they should have been able to win that game. They had the better quarterback. They had the better coach. I mean, not on Sunday, obviously, but I mean, you know, in the bigger picture, like, there was no good reason for them to lose that game. There's no, like, well, the Cowboys get paid too. Like, I don't want to hear that. Like, that's, no, like, they were the better team. That's stupid. So it's very frustrating. It kind of makes everything else feel pointless now. Of course, we have a game to talk about, but it's just like, I'm not even trying to, you know, be super down. Like, I'm not to the point where, like, I'm angry and I'm screaming. I'm just disappointed. That's what this season has been for me. And I've been trying to keep things in perspective. I've been saying that, I feel like, a lot. I think I've said it many times on this podcast where, like, this season is not some grand failure in the sense of, oh, they're just blowing. Like, they're just this, you know, best team in the league and they're just blowing these games. It's a total underperformance. No, it's not the case. They are what they are. They are what their record says they are. They are a 4-5 team. They are mediocre. They're boring, which I hate. That's the thing I hate the most for us, obviously, and for you, the fans. They're just boring. Like, they're not even fun to talk. Like there's, it's not an interesting team. And that's kind of what's bothering me this week. Like, just as far as even going for writing for BGN, it's like, what do I write about? Like, the team is mediocre. It's there. Like, I don't, what else? There's nothing interesting about this team.
Yeah, no, and watching them play, they don't break big plays. They don't create any big plays. It's one long plodding drive after another. I mean, their best offensive player outside of Carson Wentz right now is Zach Ertz, and Zach Ertz is a great tight end, but when Zach Ertz is your best player, when your tight end is really the only offensive player doing damage, you're not going to score a lot of points that way. And we've seen the Eagles' playoff odds take a big hit with that loss last week, now at 16.1%. According to Football Outsiders, I think Dallas is just ahead of them at 17%. Only six teams in the NFC have worse odds at making the playoffs now for than the Eagles do. And I think you hit the nail on the head. And I hadn't really thought about it that way, BLG, but that's what this season is disappointing, because we know that we've seen teams that win their first Super Bowl have trouble the next year. The Patriots, after their first Super Bowl, had a much better record than the Eagles will likely finish up with. Mm-hmm. I think they went 10-6, but they missed the playoffs after that first season. The Steelers in recent seasons missed the playoffs after winning the Super Bowl. It happens quite a bit to Super Bowl winning teams. There is a price to pay for playing so deep into the season, and you don't really know what changes you make during the offseason after a Super Bowl, how that's going to affect the following season. I think we saw a lot of the changes the team made over the offseason and thought, you bring in Mike Wallace in place of Torrey Smith, that's going to probably be, at the very least, a lateral move, if not an upgrade. Mm-hmm. You had to let Trey Burton go. You couldn't bring Trey Burton back. And I think one of the things that I wanted to touch on before we start talking about the Saints game is some of the stuff that Jason Kelce said this week, because he talked about some of the turnover, some of the players that they lost that aren't star players, but guys who filled roles, who knew what their jobs were and really helped to make this team go, that aren't here anymore. And you've got the players here right now who were on this team last year that are either banged up, not a year older, so they're just another year slower, or simply for reasons that we can't put our fingers on, BLG, not performing the way they did last year. And that's what makes this so frustrating, is that it is disappointing, because I thought we were going to get a better team this year. The personnel at the beginning of the season looked like it was going to be better, and for whatever reason, new players have been injured or haven't played well, and the guys who are coming back just haven't played the way they did last year.
So it's interesting what Jason Kelce had to say about, you know, lacking veterans like Brent Celek and LeGarrette Blount. And now I kind of almost don't get his point in a way, because like having those guys isn't going to fix this team. Like, we can admit that, right? Like,
right.
It's not like, oh, these are just missing Brent Celek and LeGarrette Blount. Like,
yeah.
Like, Brent Celek's not even in the league right now. He's retired. He couldn't get a job pretty well. I mean, you know, I'm sure they had offers out there, but they weren't obviously good enough for him to take it. And then LeGarrette Blount is struggling this season in Detroit. And honestly, I saw some Lions fans that I know who want him cut, basically, because he's not playing super well in Detroit. So, but I think maybe something to take away from Jason Kelce's quote there is that it's just a different team. Like, that's something I think we might have, as a fan base, have struggled to grasp this year. Like, this isn't the team that won the Super Bowl. Like, this isn't the team that won the Super Bowl heading into 2018. It's not that simple. It's not like the same team. It's a very much a different team, and mm-hmm. we're seeing that this year.
Yeah.
And that's what kind of frustrates me so much I can't even speak straight when when this team loses games, and I see on Twitter and the comments on BGN and just everywhere, it's like, you know, oh, last year was such a fluke, and like the Super Bowl doesn't even matter now. Like, what are you saying? Like, I just don't understand. What does that even mean? Like, yeah. It's a different year. It's not like you win the Super Bowl and then next year, if you don't win the Super Bowl, it doesn't count. Like, that's not how it works. Like,
right, exactly.
Each season is its own season, and the NFL is a league that is designed for competitive balance, more so than any other league, I feel like. Like, the parity in the NFL is crazy. Usually once a year, there's a graphic that the NFL puts out where it's a circle of teams, and each of those teams has beaten the team in front of them and lost mm-hmm. to the team behind them. Like, that's mm-hmm. how the NFL works. Like, that's yeah. it's just that kind of league. Like, it's set up in a way where, you know, there is a salary cap and there is a schedule that's designed for the top teams to play the hardest teams the next year. And that allows the teams from the bottom to move to the top, which the Eagles did, by the way, last year. And it also, on the other side of the coin, allows the teams from the bottom to fall, or sorry, from the top to fall mm-hmm. to the bottom. So it's just kind of, it's what it is. Like, it's how the league is designed. It's not designed where teams that are on the top just stay there all the time. The teams that do that, like the Patriots, are the exception, very much not the rule.
Yeah.
And it's very hard to do. So I don't want to make it sound like I'm making excuses, because I'm not. Like, you can be as disappointed and frustrated as you want at this team, and I don't blame you at all. I am too. But it's just like, just to have that perspective, like, I just think that's important. And just to, like, last year happened and it exists and it is
yeah.
real.
Yeah.
It doesn't, no matter what happens this year, it doesn't count any less to me. And just, I hate it too, because so many fans before last year would have said, I will trade. And they have said it. I've heard it said and I've seen it said. I will trade, you know, like 50 seasons of going 0-16 for one Super Bowl. And you say that then, but then they win the Super Bowl and all of a sudden they're 4-5. It's not even like they're winless. Like they're 4-5. They're one game under 500. And that's just like the worst thing in the world. Now, this was to be expected. I remember, you know, thinking about last year when the Eagles won the Super Bowl. And I think I would get asked questions like, you know, how long is it going to take? You know, or we talk about it, you know, when's the honeymoon going to be over? And to me, it was like, well, if they lose to the Falcons, I'm sure there are going to be calls on WIP the very next day about people being mad. So it is what it is. It's the fan base. And I get it. I don't know if that answered your question there, John. I've been thinking about this this week. Like I've been in this state of mind where I'm just kind of like trying to evaluate, you know, where the Eagles are as a team, where the fandom is as a fan base. So it's just, it's been on my mind.
I think the problem is that if there was one or two things that you could really put your finger on and say, this is why we're failing, then fans would be able to at least come up with some solutions. But the problem is that some of the players who played really well last year, who were integral to the team doing well, are playing lousy this year. Mm-hmm. And part of the problem also is that you've just had a lot of bad luck with injuries. Last year, the injuries, you had some big players go out, but you had one guy at one position here, one guy at another position here. You didn't have four guys at one position all going down at the same time. And I think we have also seen, to me, I know that there are some folks who kind of brush off the absence of the coaches who left, Frank Reich and DeFilippo not being around anymore. I'm not in the coaches' room, so I can't say for sure what their absence really means to the team. But I'm here to tell you, from what I see, I don't see the imagination that I saw last year with this offense, especially with the offense. I'm going to just talk about the offense for a moment here. I don't see them using the personnel in quite the right way. I don't think they knew what to do with Golden Tate last week, BLG. And that was my worry. I think I mentioned this to you a little bit in a BGN radio. I didn't really hit this point hard, but it kind of felt like Golden Tate was kind of a repetitive ad because you already had a guy in Zach Ertz who covered the middle of the field. And what you want is for Nelson Agholor to be that guy, which is what he was last year. And when you bring Golden Tate in, the skill set that he brought in was definitely different than what they had. They didn't have that yards after the catch guy, but they had him for two full weeks. And they really didn't have any way of getting him in the ballgame other than bubble screens and the occasional slant play or whatever. I mean, there was no imagination to using Golden Tate last week. And some of the play calling, I know Ben Solak mentioned this on one of the Kisten Solak shows, was how they've taken the ball out of Carson Wentz's hands in certain key situations where you would want him to be able to scan the field. I thought that was a great point, and that's kind of stuck with me over the last couple of days. And I thought Doug got, obviously he got out-coached last week by the Cowboys coaching staff. They seemed to know what was coming. Van Der Esch, after the game, said he knew that screen was coming on 3rd-and-2 because the Eagles had run that exact play in that exact same scenario and scored a touchdown with it. So that's a tendency that it seems as though Peterson has allowed himself to fall into his tendencies and maybe has become a little bit obvious in what he's doing. And I wonder, we talk about the players who left and the difference in how the players are performing. I think the absence of some of those coaches, just the chemistry in the coaches' room, is a little bit different, and I don't think that's helped this season either, and that's not something that could be helped. That was just, that was something that was going to happen. There's no way around it. They had to figure out a way, and maybe this year is just a transition year, and that's kind of how I'm looking at this, BLG. 2018 is just going to be, hopefully, the transition year. You win the Super Bowl. You have this transition year where everybody figures out what it means to be a Super Bowl contender year in and year out, and then starting next year, after you have a full draft, everybody gets healthy. The coaches that are there have another full offseason together. I feel much better about this team going into next year. I still feel good about it going forward. I just think this is kind of one of those transition years that was just coming like a freight train, and there's nothing they could have done about it.
I think that's very fair, and I think that's good. A good point, John. I think wasn't that kind of 2005 in some ways too?
Yeah, it was.
After they lost the Super Bowl, and it was like this team is just a mess. Like they're just a mess right now, and they kind of need to get things figured out and get back on track. And that's what it took. To your point about the coaching staff, I think that's I think it's very fair at this point to question the losses of those guys, but it's hard to quantify. And yes. I think that's always talked about. Because, like, you don't know exactly. I mean, we have an idea of what they were doing in terms of, you know, Frank Reich would help Doug Peterson with the game script. And the game script has been terrible because the Eagles are barely scoring in the first quarter. So that's something we can point to. But it's not just about losing those guys. Because, like you said, that's inevitable. Like, what were the Eagles supposed to do? I mean, Josh McDaniels was a jerk and obviously left the Colts at the altar and it would have been great. Yeah, and screwed the Eagles over. I think losing both of those guys, not just losing both of those guys because that was going to happen at some point, but losing them both in the same offseason, of course, I think really hurts. It would have been great to only have lost, well, being great to have lost none. But if you're going to lose, you know, at least if you're going to lose them both, maybe hopefully not at the same time, but whatever, it happened. But I think, you know, go back to what the Eagles can control, and that is their replacements. And I think, you know, it's tough for me to look at Mike Groh and Press Taylor and say, okay, these were definitely 100% the best guys for the job in like the whole league. You know what I mean? Because you're not you're not limited to internal promotion. Like, you don't have to do that. You can go and make an outside hire and bring someone in. And there were some guys who were out there. You have Daryl Bevel, who obviously got fired from the Seahawks and he has his issues, but like, and but he's not calling your plays at this point. You know, like, I'm not bringing in Daryl Bevel to be the play caller. I wouldn't feel great about that, but I'm bringing him in to be a voice to Doug Peterson. And those two guys have a connection. They were with the Packers. And then you have Jim Caldwell, who, again, do I feel awesome about him being the play caller? No, but he was a quarterback coach during Joe Flacco's hottest run that he ever had. And he has that Ravens connection there with Joe Douglas.
Yeah.
So maybe you bring him in. Like, it just seemed like, you know, maybe that's what Doug is missing. And that's what Frank Reich was. He was a veteran play caller, you know, experienced guy. Mike Groh is coming, you know, he's not. He's a younger guy. He's coming up the ranks. And so is Press Taylor, too, very young. And that's not to say they can't do the job because they're young. But it, my point is, you know, maybe they could have used someone more experienced in here helping out Doug. Because think about it. I mean, Doug is still only in his third season as a head coach.
Right, right.
So to, you know, to have that might be nice. Or just to have, forget even the experience for a second. How about just a voice, and Ben Solak touched on this, a voice outside of the organization.
Yes.
That's one thing I hate about teams who just, it's what I hate about the Flyers, honestly, the most, where they just, they always think the answer is within the organization. No, it's not. And why would you think that? You haven't won the championship since 1976? Like
77, 76, yeah, 75, 76 like, is what it was. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, how are you so convinced that like you have all the answers? But that's what teams do. And like they always think they know what's best. So that kind of irked me at the time. And maybe I didn't express that frustration enough. And I feel like I should have. It's just I hate the idea that just because they're in-house, that they're automatically the best guys. I think, you know, there's advantages to promoting in-house. I think it, you know, it boosts loyalty or whatever. Like there's a pro to it, too. It's not only bad. But I think that was an issue. And I think maybe in the offseason, that's something they look to address. I don't know if that means firing Mike Groh. Maybe it does. But I just think, you know, to bring in some more veteran or at least some more different voices into that room could help them. Because it just, like you said, it just doesn't seem like the offense has it this year. And now getting into this Reich and DeFilippo thing, too, I just hate this idea that, like, Doug is a total fraud. Like,
yeah, and that's not what I mean either. And I you know, obviously.
And yeah, you're not
I don't
saying
think
that.
That's right. Yeah, exactly.
But it's just like, And even if he was, what were the Eagles supposed to do? I hate this because I've seen people say like the Eagles kept the wrong coach. Okay, so what are they going to do? Like fire Doug Peterson
fire
after
the Super Bowl winning coach?
Bowl?
Yeah, yeah.
Frank Reich, come on, like shut up. Like that's just not realistic at all. And I just think it's also like it doesn't give Doug enough credit. Like again, the Eagles won the Super Bowl. Doug was calling the plays. I don't care how much Frank Reich and John DeFilippo were helping. Like to some point, Doug Peterson was making those calls, and he gets the credit for that. And I still believe in Doug Peterson on the whole. I don't think this has been his best year, but I've also seen people question him still going back from 2016. And I think that year is suddenly getting colored worse because of the Eagles are how they're doing this year. If you look back to that year, they were pretty good in point differential and DVO everything. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the record was only 7-9, but I was so sure that team was going to improve last year. Not to the extent they did. I wasn't saying I knew a Super Bowl was coming, but I knew they were going to get better because the signs pointed that way. Now, so don't discredit that year as well. It's just like the larger theme here of everything I'm saying, there's such a revisionist history going on with everything, which is what happens when the team struggles. It's only natural, but it's not a fun place to be right now. And to your larger point, I guess, about this whole thing with the coaching staff and this they're in a transition. I think that's what it is. Like, clearly, they're just probably not good enough now. They realize that, and they're going to have to fix themselves. And guess what? They have a lot of draft resources, one less or one fewer, of course, trading Golden Tate. Right. But they still have a lot of draft picks. They have enough cap space to figure out what to do in terms of keeping some of their own players. And they have a franchise quarterback, and I still think they have a head coach who can be really good. So, yes, in the long term, I think that needs to be said. Like, there's still a foundation here, and that doesn't guarantee anything, but they're not, like, eternally doomed.
Right. No, I agree with that, and obviously this season is most likely doomed, and looking ahead over the last seven games of the season, the Eagles have the hardest schedule left this season. Washington has the second easiest schedule remaining. So, again, it is a tall mountain for this team to climb if they do want to get into it. And I did mention in a piece I wrote this week about the 2006 Eagles, how they started off 5-6 and then ran the table to win the division at 10-6. And that might, you probably saw, BLG, the Bleeding Green tweet that promoted the story got ratioed pretty hard. Mm-hmm. People did not want to hear that earlier this week, but. And
I don't want to hear it.
I know, and I understand that. And teams like the Rams and the Saints weren't on that 2006 Eagles schedule, and they didn't have the kind of injury situation. I know it wasn't a perfect comparison, but 5-6 running the table is certainly a little bit more daunting than 4-5. But again, the schedule the Eagles are faced with and just the litany of injuries at certain positions are too much to bear. And we're talking about injuries. Let's look ahead to this week's game now a little bit, and let's go over the injury report, because we see that at least the Eagles will be getting Sidney Jones back this week, BLG. He was a full participant in practice on Thursday. Looks like we're going to get a good look at him on the outside, and not a moment too soon, because with Ronald Darby out for the season, and it appears as though Jalen Mills is still not going to be ready to go on Sunday. He did not practice on Thursday. This secondary is still banged up. We're looking at another corner duo of Rasul Douglas and Sidney Jones on the outside, it looks like, BLG.
And boy, I mean, the Eagles were clearly just so wrong to keep Jalen Mills in the starting lineup. You just to get Rasul Douglas out into the field, didn't you? Like, that's the stuff with when it comes to second guessing, where I'm not saying like the coaching staff is always right, but there's, you know, oftentimes there are reasons, you know, why they're doing certain things. And it's sometimes they're, I don't think they're always right, but sometimes they are. And that is a case where, man, I've never been a big Rasul Douglas believer in terms of him as a longtime starter. I think he can be a backup, sure, but I mean, I think a lot of players can be backups. So not feeling great with him in the secondary once again, but it will be interesting to see. I guess we're going to get Sidney Jones on the outside. I would assume that is where he would line up, because I don't know who else you're putting out there with Darby obviously done for the season. And then Mills out, likely out, as you said. I guess, you know, Avante Maddox mans the slot at that point with Corey Graham back at safety, who isn't really doing much other than being bad as well. So not great going up against a Saints offense that is scoring at will, and just Drew Brees putting up insane numbers, despite the fact he's going to turn 40 years old in just a couple months here in January. So it's pretty crazy how good this Saints team is. And that's a big reason why, you know, I don't think this Eagles team can win this week. Like, how do you look at that secondary, and a secondary that was getting beaten by Dak Prescott, who is very much not as good as Drew Brees.
Yeah.
And the game being in New Orleans, so you have the crowd noise and everything too, so just that doesn't hurt the defense. I don't know why I said that. Bad point. scrub that from the records. Point being, though, just that, you know, the secondary isn't looking good. The defense, I want to talk about the defense a little bit, especially coming off the Cowboys game. Yeah. There's been some talk that the defense isn't the issue this year. And I would agree in the sense of it's not the issue, but it is a issue. It's like it is very much contributing to their struggles.
Yeah.
Would
you say it's equal to the offense? I mean, I think it's a 50-50 split. I think. Because a lot of it's timing, you know. Everything in life is timing, BLG. And, you know, that's what we saw in the Cowboys game last week, is the time when the defense would falter was as crippling as anything.
They're incredibly unclutch. Like, offense finally gets some scoring drives together. Finally. It takes forever. And all of a sudden, like, they can't stop anyone. And they just allow, like, all the momentum to swing back into the other team's favor. Like, believer in momentum or not, it's just, you know, they can't come up big when it counts, and in key situations too, as we obviously know, as we've seen with the Titans game and the Panthers game and everything. And you could say, sure, the offense could do a better job of scoring points where it doesn't, you know, the defense doesn't have to be in a spot where they are in such critical situations. And there's some truth to that. But, you know, the defense isn't creating turnovers. They rank 28th in turnovers. They only have 7 this year in 9 games. I guess it's hard to be like, you know, obviously they're trying to get turnovers. It's not like an effort thing. And, you know, I guess turnovers are fluky, or, you know, there's some luck involved to some extent. But I don't know. Ultimately it comes down to them, that they're not making these plays. And it's hard, because then you're not setting up the offense with short fields to work with,
right.
Or you're not bailing them out. You're just, you know, you're putting them in a spot where they're already struggling, and now they just have to struggle even more to move the ball, which we'll get to, I hope, later to talk about the offense. But just, you know, just another takeaway from that game, like, just, you're both sides of the ball, everything is failing this team right now. Like every single, like I'm just frustrated with this. Like who do we blame the most? Like, everyone deserves blame. I know it's a boring take,
spread
but
it around.
It's, there's no one who, other than, like, you know, like Zach Ertz and like Fletcher Cox, like everyone deserves blame.
Yeah. I guess with the turnovers, I wonder if the turnovers are a factor of a measure of the fact that these defensive backs don't want to get beat deep. Early in the season, we saw the Eagles get beat on the deep ball on more than a few occasions. And I wonder if that has kind of scared the defense a little bit into playing back too much, not being aggressive enough. I mean, we saw Jalen Mills. Team started running that double move on everybody in the Eagles secondary and burning people deep. And we had thought, you know, hey, listen, that double move, you're going to get burnt deep a couple of times, but you're going to get some turnovers out of that too. Well, we haven't seen anybody get beat on double moves lately. And I think it's because Eagles defensive players are playing too passively. And frankly, the linebackers, I mentioned this also in a BGN radio a couple of weeks ago, that the linebackers have been invisible this season. They've been invisible. Nigel Bradham last year has fallen off a cliff. Mm-hmm. I mean, last year he was making plays, and granted, he was playing in the middle, you know, and now he's back on the outside because you have Jordan Hicks back. But Jordan Hicks has been largely anonymous this year too. And I realize the Eagles play in nickel probably most of the time, that the linebackers are not a huge feature of this defense, but they're not doing anything. They're not getting anything going turnover-wise, and that has been a big problem, too, with third-down stoppages. The linebackers aren't helping out in getting key third-down stops either. And again, that's a lot of times the Eagles are in nickel in third and long situations. The third and 15 last week against Dallas was infuriating, because I know that Schwartz likes to play back and have players pursue, but it just, whether it's a lack of execution on those plays, or he just doesn't have the same talent that he did last year because of injuries, or teams know what he's going to do in those situations, the Eagles defense has not gotten turnovers. The linebackers have been invisible, and it's just way too easy for teams to be able to convert on these situations where the Eagles clearly should be in the power position.
Yeah, the linebackers, I mean, you think about the one play they've made. It was when Jordan Hicks tipped that Eli Manning pass against the Giants. And again, it's Eli Manning. And Kamu had that good interception. Like, that's the only thing that stands out in my mind. And that's weird, too, kind of, because Jordan Hicks is, like, usually a ball magnet. Like, that guy is, like, you look at his stats, like, coming into this year, in terms of, like, forced fumbles and interceptions, like, he's always making plays on the ball. But I mean, maybe the injuries have just sapped him, you know, from being that kind of player that he used to be. Or maybe, I don't know, he's in a contract year and he's playing maybe a little more passively. I don't know. I like Jordan Hicks a lot as a player and a person, based on my interactions with him. So it's disappointing for sure to see that. And I want to flip it back to the offense for a second here, because, man, are they disappointing in a lot of ways. And, you know, like I was just saying, a lot of people deserve the blame. I mean, Carson deserves blame. Like, that the game against Dallas was not, like, it's so weird, because his stats look good, but just, like, you're not seeing it. Like, you're not seeing that manifest, obviously, because the team is 4-5, and it's just not good enough. And they've lost 3 home games in a row. Like, what the hell? Like, they had the best home field advantage in the NFL since the beginning of 2016. And then they lost 3 home games in a row. And, you know, Carson was the quarterback for those. So, like, not very encouraging. Not to say that I'm down on him all of a sudden, but it's just like, you're it's in a weird spot. I know, John, you'd want to talk about, like, is he having an elite year? And no, he's not, because it's not just about where he is. And he's not having a bad year. I want to make that clear. I'm not saying he's having a bad year, but he's not having an elite year, because, you know, you look at what Patrick Mahomes and Drew Brees are doing, and they're like, it's just otherworldly, basically. And even around the league, and even Philip Rivers, like, you have these guys who are just ahead of him right now. And I still think Carson is a top 10 quarterback at worst. And I think at best, he's in that top five level. So it's a very good spot to be in still. But it's just, you know, the point is that everyone deserves blame. And now, with that said, I want to take some blame immediately off Carson as I say that, because he has had to deal with the highest percentage of drops on third down this year. And that is courtesy of the ESPN's NFL matchup show. I saw that, and that kind of fits the eye test. That was like a big thing that kind of stood out to me in that Cowboys game. It's like every time, you know, they would need like a big third down play or something, like Alshon Jeffrey's not making a catch. And even in the end zone there when Carson threw too late, I mean, Alshon still had a chance at it, and he's still not making the catch. Like, it's ultimately not his fault, but it's just like, someone make a play. Like, someone make a catch. And
Like Alshon slowed down on that route too a little bit, or hesitated across the middle and kind of threw Carson off a little bit. So
right. Yeah. But the overall thing with this offense that is so frustrating, it's just they make it look so hard. Like every play, like every drive, it's like they have to, you know, dink and duck down the field. And it's not in a way where, like, Carson's hitting this guy. I mean, besides Zach Ertz, who gets wide open and then falls down. But it's not like he's hitting a guy in stride and that guy is, like, you know, then taking the ball and making a couple people miss. Or, you know, they're scoring this big, long touchdown play. I think Shil Kapadia had pointed out, they rank, like, fewest in the league. Or they're at least towards the bottom in long plays that have reached the end zone this year. Like, they can't get into the end zone on a big play. Like, they have to drive down. They can hit some big plays to get them to the red zone, but they can never just, like, you know, finish that big play. And it's just, I don't know what that is fully and scheme or whatever, but it's just so frustrating. And in a day and age where offense is being made look so easy by some teams in the NFL, such as the Saints, like this week, it's just like, why can't the Eagles have that? And we just saw it last year. You know, the offense looked a lot easier last year, but this year, it's so difficult. Like, Carson, like, for him to complete a pass, it's like he has to throw it to a receiver who's being tightly covered, and it has to be like the perfect pass, or, like, you know, it's low to the ground and there's like no yak opportunity. It's not fun. Like, this team, go back to what I've said at the top of the show here, it's just not a fun team to watch. Like, what is enjoyable? Like, what does this team hang their hat on? Like, what is good and fun about them? So,
One of the things I think really helped that offense last year was a running game. And I mentioned it in the preview show before the Cowboys game last week. The way the Eagles beat the Cowboys last year was running the ball. They didn't beat them by throwing the ball. You had three running backs go for 50 yards or more. I think he had 180 yards rushing that night in Dallas. And last year we saw that this offense, when Carson Wentz went down, a lot of us thought, well, you know, this might be okay because this is an Eagles team that has showed you that they can win games running the football. But then they had three good runners, and we've seen Corey Clement be one of those players who performed great last year, who has just not done it this year. Jay Ajayi's injury was a killer for this team. It took a playmaker out of the backfield. So the Eagles are no threat running play action, which draws defenders up and helps you get deep, which helps you get some, you know, get some receivers behind the defensive backs. And there's none of that with the Eagles right now. I kind of joked last week. I said, are the Eagles going to run the ball 15 times or more? Well, they basically ran it 15 times. And you can't do that in this league. You look at the great teams, the great offenses. I know that this is a passing league now, but you look at the Saints, they have one great wide receiver. But they have Alvin Kamara and
Mark Ingram.
Thank you, Mark Ingram at running back, who, and Kamara is just an unbelievable player out of the backfield catching the ball. He basically acts as a second wide receiver. But you have with the Chiefs, you have Kamar Hunt. You have with the Rams, you have
Todd Gurley.
I mean, you have with these great offenses, you have to have
James Conner and the Steelers. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you have these great runners, and they don't have to be first round picks like with Conner's. I mean, they don't have to be studs, right? I mean, you can find these guys in different places like the Eagles did last year. They had a great committee where everybody knew what they were doing. They also, BLG, had an offensive line that wasn't completely banged up. Jason Kelsey looks a step slower this year. I mean, for as old as he is, I'm amazed at the fact that Jason Peters is out there doing what he's doing, but he's banged up. Mm-hmm. He's not the same guy he was 2 years ago or in the first half of last year before he got hurt. And Lane Johnson, bless his heart, is battling through all these different kinds of things. So you've got an offensive line where your three best offensive linemen are nowhere near 100%. And I think that is a big thing that's killing this offense is Doug Peterson doesn't have any confidence in the running game. And that is taking away a lot of the effectiveness of play action and some of the things that they can do passing the ball.
It's really frustrating. I mean, the backs just aren't good. Like Wendell Smallwood, he only got 2 carries against Dallas. Like I think, you know, they really looked at their team during the bye week. And I think they were like, man, I think we have to get Wendell Smallwood out there less because he's not good. He's just clearly not good. I tweeted it out today that there are 54 qualified running backs in terms of 15-plus yards this year. And Wendell Smallwood has exactly 1 15-plus yards this year. And it was exactly 15 yards. And so that ranks 51st out of those 54 running backs. The last 3 have 0. So one of them is LeGarrette Blount. LeGarrette Blount is one of those players who does not have a run of 15 yards. So it's like, there's no explosion. That's a big problem with the offense as a whole, but especially the running game. And the fact that like Josh Adams, an undrafted rookie free agent, who missed all of spring practices. He was in and out a little bit during training camp with some injuries. And, like, had a pretty good preseason for the most part. But I think relative to expectation, too, he wasn't, like, blowing people's minds. And I like Josh Adams. And I want to see him get the ball more. But at the same time, like, do I think that he's just this star in the making? Like, I don't. And I hope I'm wrong about that. But I don't see – I mean, his numbers have been good, obviously. He's been an efficient – player when he's at the ball, but it's also a small sample size. And I also think he's limited. Like, even if he's a good runner, he's really not giving you anything as a receiver, and he has no history of doing that. So that's a problem, too. Like, you know, when he's out there, they're not going to throw to him, or at least very often. So there are limitations there as well. And I think that is an issue. Just, you know, yes, it is a passing league, but to have that pressure taken off of you sometimes, like, wouldn't that be nice? Like, maybe if Carson isn't having the perfect game, hey, let's just give it to this running back and have him run a little bit and kind of make life easier for Carson.
You know, I remember you in 2016, BLG, beating the drum for a running back for Carson Wentz all year long. We were doing podcasts.
and going into the 2017 draft, there was that golden opportunity to do it. There were so many players, and I was so pissed when they didn't get one of them. They ended up getting Donald Pumphrey, like the worst player, of course, that they could have gotten at running back, basically, who has not played an NFL snap. He's on the practice squad. We'll see if he ever even plays in the NFL. There's no even guarantee. So it's kind of frustrating. That's definitely been an issue this year, just to not have that. It's not like the make or break thing ultimately, but it's that piece I think that you're missing from the offense. And I hope they address and, you know, think about just for how long the Eagles had good running backs. And it was such a luxury, and it was so nice to see. Like, when you had Shady, you can just count on to have that guy there. Mm-hmm. And Westbrook, Deuce Daly,
even like, Carell Buckhalter for a number of years.
And now it's just like, it's crap. Like, Smallwood is terrible. There's a reason he was the fourth string running back coming into this year. He is fine for a fourth string running back. Like, if they kept him and he was in that role, fine. But like, if he's your number one guy, it's not good enough. If Corey Clement is your number one guy, I mean, at this point where he is and whatever funk he is in or whatever you want to call it, like, it's not good enough. I had another stat, I think, on Corey Clement. 51st out of 58 players in yards after contact per attempt this season. So, hey, Doug, maybe don't throw to him behind the sticks on a crucial third down, because he is not making people miss at all this year. So it's frustrating, man.
And that's funny, too, because Clement was a guy who really was kind of a powerful runner after contact last year. Yeah. He became essentially their goal line guy a lot of times late in the season and in the playoffs. Down by the goal line. He has not been the same either this year. And so, you know, we're looking at now going up against the Saints team that scores a league high 36.7 points a game, man. I mean, and you've got a secondary that's going to try and patch it together with bubble gum and rubber bands. And I the Eagles, this team has to get off to a faster start this week, BLG. They have to score some first quarter points. The game script has to be better. And the execution of the game script has to be better. I don't know that actually even the plays are as much the problem. I mean, it's probably part of the problem, but we've seen players just not execute properly. We saw on the opening series last week a couple of players do make mistakes, and that's been a big issue as well. And that's not something you notice as you're watching the games. That's only something you notice afterwards watching the All 22. You can see guys not finishing a block or blocking someone incorrectly, or a receiver not releasing as quickly as he should, or not recognizing that the defense is playing man-to-man or zone or whatever it might be. And the Eagles have scored just 21 first quarter points this year, and that's the fewest in the NFL. So, I mean, that has to change this week. If the Eagles are going to have any chance in this game against the Saints, they cannot get down to this team 14-0, 21-3. They have got to stay with this team early, BLG. They have to score points on the opening drive this week.
How about no game script? The game script is clearly not working. Yeah. Why not just go in there and be like, hey, Carson, just do some stuff. Like, go make something happen. Like, I know that sounds stupid, but like, I mean, I don't know. I trust Carson. I'm sure he could figure some things out. Or let him do the game script for what I care. Like, they have to change something, because clearly what they're doing is not working. And if, you know, maybe that's the indictment on Mike Rowe right there, that we don't know for sure that he is doing exactly what Frank Reich is doing, because he really wouldn't divulge that when he was asked about that this week. So I don't know for sure, but I would imagine, I think it's fair to guess that he might be doing the same thing in that mm-hmm. responsibility of coming up or helping Doug with that play script there. And if he is, he's clearly not doing a great job. So,
yeah, right.
I would love to see a fast start. I have exactly zero faith they will do
confidence.
That. Because how could you? And that's how do you trust this Eagles team at all? Like, I just, you can't, because they haven't shown it. Like, and I think it's important for you there, as you did, to point out that it's not all in the coaching. I think the coaching is probably getting a lot more criticism than the players. And I get it. I mean, the coaching deserves blame. I'm not trying to take blame off of the coaching, but I think the players probably deserve a little bit more maybe blame than they are getting there, because they have to execute as well, and they're not. And it's not just like they're being put in these possible positions to execute. You know, as Andy Reid would always say, he needs to put his players in a better position to succeed. Yeah. And I don't think that's the issue. I don't think they're always being put in bad positions, but they're also not executing. So it's a problem. And it's just, you know, it's across the board. Again, it's across the board of this team. Lots of blame to go around. It's frustrating. It's not fun. The Eagles are 4-5, and they could easily be 4-6 on Sunday. I have every expectation that they are going to lose this game. And it sucks. So,
yeah.
Listen to BG Radio.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, if you don't want to watch the games, you can listen to us talk about them all week. No, but you're probably going to watch the games. Just a couple other quick things on the injury report. Hearing Timmy Jernigan could play this week against the Saints. He's, of course, not on the injury list because he's still on the NFI list. But we're also hearing Mike Wallace out of his walking boot, but he hasn't started running yet. I mean, seriously, by the time Wallace is able to play, this season is going to be all wrapped up. I mean, I understand why he wants to come back, but your fast receiver is just out of his walking boot and hasn't started running yet. I mean, are we, you know, what's the point here? Still no Darren Sproles at practice, limited in practice on Thursday, Lane Johnson and Haloti Ngata. I think that was a big thing last week too, BLG, is all week long Lane Johnson was practicing. It looked like he was going to play, and then suddenly right before the game, he's out, and you had to put Vitae in at right tackle for him. And then you run Josh Adams behind Vitae on 4th-and-1. You know, it's just
winning again, combination.
Yeah, and that's that to me is the epitome of this season. Is okay, what are you going to do? Lane Johnson's hurt. You have to make the best of a bad situation. So you put the guy in there that you have to be your versatile backup guy, who's clearly not as good as the other guys. But you know, you hope that Vitae with a little bit of help can get the job done. But on a 4th-and-1, you've got to recognize the personnel you have. And that's what I don't understand is running. I mean, you want to run Josh Adams in that situation. If you're going to use one of the three running backs, that's probably the best call. But I'm not running to the right behind the one offensive lineman that you can't really trust at this point. I'm running behind Jason Peters, even as banged up as he is, and trying to go that route. You know, that's part of what's been going on with this team this year is, yes, they've dealt with a lack of injuries, but it doesn't seem like the team has been able to weather the storm and make good decisions based on the personnel that they actually have out there. So hopefully a healthier Lane Johnson this week helps out a little bit, BLG.
Yeah, we'll see. He didn't go through a pregame workout last week, which is not a good sign, and clearly meant he wasn't going to play at that point.
Yeah.
Sidney Jones did, by contrast, and also he has been ramped up to a full participant in practice, like you said. So good to have him back, like we talked about at the top of the show, and we'll see potentially how he does starting on the outside. But yeah, the rest of the injury report, I don't know if Lane's going to play or not. I would honestly guess that he wouldn't, just because, you know, he was limited all last week and he didn't play. Looks like he's going to be limited all again. I'm just guessing he's not going to play. We'll see on Friday, the final injury report. If he's full go on Friday all of a sudden, okay, maybe that changes. But I think you just go back to the line as a whole on both sides of the ball. Like, what was the strength of the Eagles last year? It was the trenches. And this year, can you really say the same thing?
No.
Not really.
No.
The defensive line has dropped off. I think there's still the strength of the defense overall. And I think they're an above average unit. They're not bad all of a sudden, but they're just not quite as dominant as they were last year. They don't.
And they wear down late, BLG.
And they should, honestly. Yeah. They should wear down late because there's no rotation. Like, you don't have Bo Allen. Jimmy Durningham hasn't been here. Derek Barnett is hurt. Brandon Graham came into the season with an injury, you know, coming off that ankle injury that he had in the offseason. So Chris Long is a year older. You know, Michael Bennett has been very good, but also he's up there too. So it was tough. And on the offensive line, obviously you've been banged up all around. You had a change at left guard. And it's just not the same as it was last year. And it's just a different year, too. Like, and you're coming off the Super Bowl. And maybe there is some complacency to some level there. And that factors into the whole hangover discussion. So it's tough. Like, when that's the strength of your team, and I think this team overall is a good job of, you know, putting the resources there and the focus there. And I think in the long run, that is another reason to be encouraged about, or at least to have faith in this team's future. So they value those sides of the ball. And, you know, if they can prioritize that, I think that will pay off ultimately as it did last year. But right now, it's just not good enough. And to have Big V in there, I think people don't realize how much of a liability that is. Michael Kiss had a great breakdown of that on Bleeding Green Nation. It's not just about like the one-on-one of, you know, Lane Johnson being replaced by Big V, who on a glance from, if we're talking about him, Big V is serviceable. I think anyone can kind of agree with that. It doesn't mean he's good. He's certainly, there's a lot of bad, but, you know, overall he's generally serviceable. But where does that serviceable level, you know, what does that, it's not like you just stick him in there and he's serviceable. It's like he's serviceable because you're asking a lot of other players to help him out through the game. And that as takes effects on the offense as a whole, because all of a sudden you're leaving more players into block or to chip, and that's, you know, hurting the offense. So that's kind of just where it starts there in the trenches, and they haven't been good enough, and that's a big issue.
Well, one last thing before we move on about the Saints is I just wanted to, you know, we didn't really talk much about Drew Brees, but his 123.8 passer rating is the best in the NFL, and his connection that he has with Michael Thomas is something else. ESPN Stats Info had this number. Drew Brees has connected with Michael Thomas on 89.5% of his throws to him this year. That would be the highest completion percentage for any quarterback wide receiver duo in the last 15 years. I mean, they have a special connection right now, but they also rely heavily on their running game. And if there's any cause for enthusiasm, that it would be that the Eagles' run defense last week, notwithstanding, is generally pretty good against the run. But again, we mentioned that Kamara does so much out of the backfield in the passing game that really he's such a double threat, and that team just figures out a way to run the ball on teams. So it's just a phenomenal offense right now, and they are hitting on all cylinders at the moment. So. We are going to give you our Eagles versus Saints pick here coming up in just a couple minutes. But as we do every week, let's just run down a couple NFC East games. And I threw one bonus game in there as well this week, BLG. But we'll start off in Atlanta. The Dallas Cowboys go down to Atlanta to take on a Falcons team that has played some better football lately, but is by no means a great team. Atlanta favored by 3.5 points in most of the places that I looked at. How are you feeling about the Cowboys at the Falcons right now with Atlanta giving 3.5?
I'll take the Falcons here. You know, the Cowboys still stink. I know they beat the Eagles. The Eagles stink more, clearly. But I still think they're pretty bad as a whole. And Atlanta obviously has their issues. They just lost to the Browns. But I think that'll wake them up a little bit here. They're back at home. They know they can't take a team easy. And I think they'll bounce back with a win. I just think they're better than Dallas overall.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think Atlanta handles Dallas pretty easily. I wonder if Dallas probably played their best game of the season on Sunday night against the Eagles, and now you travel to a Falcons team where Matt Ryan is playing some very good football this year. He has had a very good season. It's kind of interesting that there's a lot of really good quarterbacks having good seasons on teams that are struggling. Aaron Rodgers with the Packers, Ryan with the Falcons, Wentz on the Eagles. There's a few different teams where that's happening this year. Looking at the next game, Houston at Washington. The Texans are favored by 3 points. And by the way, this is the last winning team on the Redskins' schedule this year. Washington, a home underdog to the Texans. BLG, I like Washington in this game as a home underdog. I know Houston's hot, but I don't know that Houston. We've talked about the Texans that they're not really all that good. And going into Washington and being a road favorite by 3 points, I'm not buying that.
Yeah, I'll take the points here. I think that's pretty easy for me. And Washington isn't that great either. I mean, you look at that Buccaneers game, like they easily could have lost that in a world like, because how the Buccaneers move the ball like for over 500 yards and they only score, what, 3 points?
It was an unbelievable cacophony of turnovers like, from
that Tampa. Happens. So, like, give teams that amount of yardage against Washington, you know, in a simulation over so many times, and they're not scoring 3 points every time. That's the very rare outcome. So, Washington sucks too, but you know, they don't suck as much as some other teams, but they're not great. But still, I don't think Houston's good. We've talked about that. Some of these wins here, like they're overtime, and they're a lot of them are like really close. They just beat the Broncos a couple weeks, right? Where like, you know, Denver misses a last second field goal. Like it's just they're not a very super legitimate team to me. So Washington's at home. They're getting points. I think that's an easy bet there.
By the way, did you see some of the comments some Washington players have been making about their home fans and their stadium?
They've been calling them out, right?
Oh, ripping them like crazy. It's such a terrible crowd. The Washington Redskins crowd used to be great back in the day, you know, back in the Joe Gibbs days and all that. It's just there is no zeal for that team in that stadium. Even a team that has a good record, there's no confidence in the city in that football team.
In fairness to them, that stadium is horrible, at least from what I hear. I haven't been there.
Oh, it's awful.
Maybe Dan Snyder fixed the stadium and some more people would come.
It's impossible to get to. It takes forever to get there. It's totally inaccessible. The in-stadium experience is dog crap.
The press box view is terrible from the pictures I've seen.
Yes. Yes. I've been in the press box. I was working as a runner for Westwood One when they were doing an Eagles Redskins Sunday night or a Monday night game years ago. I think this was back in 2004 in the Super Bowl season, and I was in the press box. And you are tucked away over to it was hard to even know where it was. We were on like the 15-yard line, having to look diagonally across. You couldn't see anything. It's just awful, unbelievably awful. All right, let's look at Tampa at the Giants. I mean, really, who cares? But I included it because it's an NFC East game. Tampa favored by 1 point on the road. It's a pick 'em. Yeah, you know, Tampa put up a lot of points. I mean, I think Tampa's going to move the ball on the Giants. I think Tampa's going to score points. And I don't think the Giants are going to. I mean, I know the Giants are playing a Tampa defense that's brutal, but I don't know. I think Tampa's got more talent. I'll take the Buccaneers in this one, BLG.
I took the Giants last week, and I was right, and I think it was an easy bet to me. They were getting points on the road against the San Francisco team. I'll take them again, because I think that they're bad, clearly.
You love Eli Manning.
That's what it is. But I just think, you know, I think the teams they're playing here are worse. Like, I think the 49ers are worse, and I think the Buccaneers, at where they are at, they also have the potential to be pretty bad. They also have some variance for upside there with Ryan Fitzpatrick, of course, but I'll take the Giants, and I would love for the Giants to win because all they continue to do is kind of just screw up their draft positioning. So, hey, I'll take it.
Yeah. All right. And the big game that we're going to get on the NFL schedule this week is the Kansas City Chiefs at the LA Rams. I mean, I think that everybody thinks this is a Super Bowl preview.
Not me.
Not you. Okay.
Not me. We'll get all right. into that.
Okay. Yeah, let's do that. But the Rams are favored by 3 points in this one. BLG, how do you see this one shaking out, buddy?
Oh, I will say, I think the Super Bowl preview would be Kansas City versus the Rams or the Saints. I think the Saints are going to the Super Bowl. And since it's Saints week, I'll get into it a little bit. It just feels like it's their year. Like you watched that. Did you watch that Monday Night Football game where Drew Brees broke the record? Like it just feels like it's their year. It really does to me. You know, Drew Brees, it's probably his last ride, I would assume, maybe. Mm-hmm. He's just having an amazing season. This Rams or the Saints team is very talented. They easily could have gone to the Super Bowl last year, you know, had the Minnesota Miracle not happen. So
that's true.
I think they're very good. But as far as this the Chiefs at Rams game now, which will be played in LA instead of Mexico City because of the terrible field conditions and everything, huge game and a great Monday Night Football game. The Monday Night Football slate has really not been too great for a couple weeks now. And this game is easily the game of the year in the entire league so far, at least on paper. Man, I think I took the Chiefs. I took the Chiefs to win in the BGN picks, so I can't do that and not take them here, getting the points. I just think, you know, LA is a good team, but I just think the Chiefs are better. I think they, I think their offense is even better. I like Pat Mahomes more than Jared Goff, which, you know, is a big factor for me, the quarterback thing there. And I'll take Andy Reid over Sean McVay as well. So that's what it comes down to me. I will take the Chiefs with the points on the road.
I'm going to ring the bell on you, BLJ,
right,
here.
Do
because
it.
I think this feels like an Andy Reid overthink game.
We haven't had it yet, and it's
no,
it's right
haven't.
There.
It's right there. And the Rams are a really good team. I don't know how much of a home field advantage LA has, but I know Kansas City has a huge home field advantage, so it definitely benefits the Rams to be playing this game in Los Angeles. But I think LA beats Kansas City here for no other reason than, you know, I do think that Andy Reid is due for a game where he basically makes a bunch of wrong decisions, poor clock management, and so far that they've had enough talent to make Andy Reid look really good. And I love Andy Reid. I hope he wins the Super Bowl this year. I'm pulling for the Chiefs. If, you know, as it looks like the Eagles are not going to be in contention here for this thing, but I do think this is one of those games where Andy's going to go in and it's just not going to happen for Kansas City. The Rams at home are incredibly good. I do think it's going to be high scoring, obviously. So bet the over, everybody, if you're going to do that. But I'll take the Rams as a 3-point favorite here in LA. So let's move on, BLG, to the Eagles versus Saints pick. And really, in short, is there any rationale anyone can make to pick the Eagles this week?
I mean, the NFL is a random league. Weird things can happen. You know, the Bills can go to Minnesota and somehow blow the Vikings out. It makes no sense. It can happen. Yes.
Yeah. I
mean, anything can happen in the NFL. But it won't happen this week. I can't see it. I can't. And I guess I was saying the same thing when the Eagles had just gotten the doors blown off of them on Thanksgiving Day 2015, and then they go to New England to play the Patriots, and they beat the Patriots somehow with Sam Bradford at quarterback. Like, so crazier things have happened. I get it, but I don't see it with this team. They've been competitive all year. I think that's an underrated thing about this team. Like, they've been in every single game.
They haven't lost a game by more than one possession, right?
Yeah, that's not like, oh my God, like, moral victory, but it's the context of, like, they're not this horrible team. There are teams that are really bad that are getting their doors blown off of them. But that might be the Eagles this week because, again, the Saints offense is really good. I think the Saints kind of are going to take this one a little bit personal because I think they really did think, you know, that they could have gone to the Super Bowl and possibly won had they had the chance to play the Eagles last year. And I think they kind of want to prove that in this one. So I really like the Saints here. I think my prediction that I gave to Canal Street Chronicles, who, by the way, Saints writer, actually took the Eagles to win this game. What?
Wow,
I have no idea.
Really?
Yeah. So go read that article on BGN if you want to see why a Saints reader thinks the Eagles could win this week. But to me, I just don't see it. And I am going to take the Eagles to lose 42-21.
Boy, oh boy, 42-21, man. I agree with you. The only way the Eagles could win this game is if they get a bunch of wacky turnovers, if there's maybe a special teams touchdown, which the Eagles haven't come close to breaking a special teams touchdown this year, or maybe the turnover thing happens, you know, get a ball tipped at the line that gets intercepted, run back for six or something like that, there's an injury or something like that, or, you know, just the Saints come out flat. Maybe I can't imagine the Saints would... that this would be a trap game necessarily for New Orleans because this is the defending world champions. As you mentioned, they do feel like they probably could have gone into Philadelphia last year and given certainly a better game than the Vikings ended up giving the Eagles in the NFC Championship game. But I don't think so. I think the Saints are going to be up for this game as well. And I just, you look at it on paper, and there doesn't seem to be anything the Eagles can do to stop this offense. I do think the Eagles will do a better job than most at keeping New Orleans out of the end zone. Maybe they do seem to have the ability to force more field goals than touchdowns. So I don't think I'm going to put this score in the 40s for New Orleans, but I've got New Orleans beating the Eagles 34-24. I do think the Eagles will pile up some points during the course of the game here and there, but it's going to be like it has been. It's going to be kind of a slog going down the field. And, you know, even against a defense that some weeks can be quite porous, New Orleans is, I think, going to handle the Eagles pretty easily here as well. So I'll be interested to check out what the New Orleans writer, what his rationale was for picking the Eagles, because I sure don't see it. But we got a 4:25 kickoff. It's on Fox on Sunday afternoon. BLG, we got a 4-5 football team getting ready to go up against an 8-1 team. What are your final thoughts, my friend? That's a good final thought right there, man.
Yeah,
exhale.
I just don't know what to say. It's a mediocre team. They're boring. We just did, an hour-long podcast about them. So thank you for listening. I appreciate it. You might want to give up on the team, but don't give up on us, obviously. We appreciate you listening to us. We'll be here for you, win or lose, the whole rest of the season, good or bad. So at least you can have that to look forward to. And I guess that's about it. How about just don't totally get blown out this week, and that'll be a weak moral victory.
Yeah, let's keep it to a one possession loss if we could, just in keeping with the theme here of the 2018 season. And just a reminder, folks, if you haven't done so yet, if you wouldn't mind leaving us a rating and a review at Apple Podcasts, would help new Eagles fans find the podcast. And so if you haven't done that yet, then you wouldn't mind spending a couple seconds going to Apple Podcasts, finding Bleeding Green Nation, and leaving a review for all the shows we have here. We would greatly appreciate it. That'll do it for episode number 21 of BGN Radio. For Brandon Lee Gouton, I'm John Stolness. Everybody try and enjoy the game on Sunday.
That doesn't make sense.
Hey guys, this is John Stolness from the Good Fight and the Phillies podcast, Hittin' Season, where I talk to Phillies beat writers, broadcasters, and fellow Good Fight bloggers, as well as national baseball writers, and the occasional interview with Matt Klentak and Gabe Kapler. Also, you'll get Continued Success, a Phillies podcast hosted by Justin Clue and Liz Rocher, covering all things Phillies, and The Dirty Inning, a hilarious podcast hosted by Justin and Trevor Strunk, looking at the very worst innings in Phillies history. Make sure you are subscribed to the Good Fight podcast feed.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure, it's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.